Say hello to my little friend.
Hello, my little friend.
Yes, okay, all right, we are recording. Hey, you, and welcome. My name is Mike, and if you're listening to this, you're listening to the That Chapter podcast.
Here we are again.
Fucking hell, man, I'm getting worse at introducing these goddamn podcasts. Let me tell you that.
The intros are hard, and I find also the ending is hard, because I never want to leave. It just keeps going.
Well,
it's hard to say goodbye.
It is. Man, it is tough. It is tough. You know, I just want to stay here all day yapping away, and hopefully people are listening to this and not switching it off when we keep on droning. Man, this is going to be a tough one to get through, because I am tired.
Long week.
Fuck my life.
Long week, I just
haven't been sleeping like at all. But you know what? It's Wednesday, the 24th. So for the folks at home, what was that? What are you laughing at? Apparently what I just did was very funny. For the folks at home, you know, we usually record these a couple of weeks in advance because, you know, we got lives and we don't want to leave people at home without something to listen to. Mm-hmm. I know how they look forward to it every week. Everybody's listening, counting in the minutes. So, but right now it's Wednesday the 24th of January and it has been very stormy.
It has.
Hold on to your butts, you know, I'm getting blown. Oh, very good impression of a storm.
Thanks.
And I've not been sleeping at all. Like I am. So this is going to be a good one for folks to listen to. So if this sounds like shit, blame the storm. Don't blame me.
It could be a bit all over the place, but we'll get through it. We'll get through it together.
Keith's going to carry this episode for sure. And how are you? Speaking of Keith, how are you?
I'm good. Not too bad. How are you getting on? You have a busy week coming up, apart from this.
I do.
You're going away, aren't you?
I'm going to Budapest. It's my 1 year anniversary of being a married man. Sorry, lady. it's my 1 year anniversary. So me and the wife are heading off to Dirty Hungary, and gonna have a good time. It's a beautiful city, Budapest. By the way, as I'm saying this, I'm opening up Keith's Instagram because people found it since last, I would say the last episode is like probably like 3 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Man, the amount of comments Keith have gotten on your... Oh, you're hearting them all, hearted by author.
I thought it'd be nice.
Are being nice. A lot of people have comments on your Instagram. It's pretty cool. Finally a face reveal. Man, it's great.
That's it, yeah.
Popular man.
Evan's been really nice. So thank you.
I know. Well, that's it. That's the only reason I started up a podcast is because, or, you know, with you, is people are only allowed to be nice to me.
Mm.
You know, I don't want any complaints, any negative feedback. I just don't want to hear it. You know, the only reason I started this is for positive comments. People say nice things to me and compliment me. Of course.
Keep it to yourself.
Yeah. So, Keith, what's going on with you? Any scary stories from your House of Horrors, which is your home?
I do.
Folks, I'm shocked.
So I do have one, and I legit scared the bejesus out of my wife. And
really? Yeah. So, I mean, the last spooky thing that happened was before Christmas, I think, was the door that opened by itself.
The door slowly opening, either the ghost going out to work or coming in, we don't know.
Hey, honey,
I gotta go. But this was a spooky one. So I was upstairs in the office and my wife was downstairs in the living room just watching.
So what set the scene? What day of the week was it?
Tuesday, I believe.
Tuesday, Tuesday. And what time of day?
It was late. We just put our daughter to bed. So it was after 7:30, I'd say about 8 o'clock.
The hour of the wolf.
The hour of the wolf, is it?
I have no idea.
Let's go with that.
It sounds spooky though. Come on, we're trying to set the scene here.
Okay. The spooky hour of 8 o'clock, 8 p.m.
Keith's got the sand in his eyes, he's yawning, he's got his little pajamas on, he's ready to go to bed.
Got that big floppy hat.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever that thing is, you're drinking hot cocoa.
Yeah, that's it. So I was upstairs in the office doing a bit of pod work, actually.
Oh, really?
Working on the podcast.
Were you researching the episode we're actually going to do right now?
I was, actually, yeah. What? So this is the exact episode.
Folks, it's all coming full circle.
Wow. So I was upstairs and my wife's downstairs and she heard me call down to her.
Mm-hmm.
So I called out her name and she called back up like, what? And I called again and she called back like, what do you want? And then I said, come here. So she's like, went out to the stairs and she called up, what do you want? And she came up the stairs and then she came into my office. She's like, what do you want? And I was like, I haven't been calling you. I swear to God. And she was like, she got really freaked out, really flushed. She was like, I swear to God, I hear you call me and you answered. So you answered saying, come here. And then she went upstairs and I was like, I did not call you.
Wow.
I've just been sitting here the whole time. I had my earphones in and I was like, I've been sitting here. I did not call you. She got really freaked out.
That is pretty freaky.
Yeah, so.
Are you the ghost? Sometimes I think I can see through you, and I'm really not sure.
That's just my pale complexion.
Yeah, exactly. You just blend
good
in.
Good Irish grey skin.
Yeah, exactly. The old moldy wallpaper texture we all have. Well, that's freaky. That's Chels, babe. Chels.
It was, and yeah, as I said, like, scared the bejesus over. She, like, no explanation for it. It's like, that was really, really weird. But on the bright side, I guess it's not coming after me anymore. It's going after her.
Hey, listen, you know,
it's off my back.
It's not your problem anymore.
Yep.
That's all I'll say.
Got that monkey ghost off my back.
That's it. It's like, you don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun the other person. So it's her problem now, really.
Exactly.
You're fine.
Yeah,
you're scot-free.
Yeah, we'll get her in the pod next time.
Yeah, exactly. She can tell the story. What's the ghost up to now? All right. That is pretty freaky.
Yeah. So I'll keep you updated. Whoever the ghost is keeps calling my wife. But yeah, we'll see. I'll let you know.
Has your voice, apparently.
But it's trawling my voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very weird. Very weird. And that was the thing. She said, like, it sounded like you. She's like, I heard you from downstairs. You called my name.
Are you sure she wasn't just like listening to the podcast?
No, she was watching TV.
Ah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Very, very strange.
Yeah.
Very weird.
The ghost is impersonating you, taking over your life.
Yeah.
And yeah, next time it's going to be the ghost. I don't know. You're not the ghost right now.
Yeah. Whoa. How do you know, Mike?
Folks, first time I've ever heard a ghost on a podcast.
I just like vanish into the mist.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be cool. That'd be awesome.
Well, actually, it kind of sucked because I don't have any video. I'm not video naming this.
You're on your own,
baby.
If
this was on video, it'd be great. Yeah. Like, fuck. Guys, he just disappeared, I swear. All right, cool. That's a spooky story. I'm sure the folks at home are shitting their pants.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, there you go. All right. Fun times. Now, shall we get into today's topic?
Let's do it. Let's get it. I'm really excited about this one. I think it's a really good episode. When you sent me the script, I was reading through the script, and honest God, it reads like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild.
But so. it's real. This shit really happened, if you can believe
very,
that.
It's very real.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed it is. Today, folks, we're talking about the case of the Beltway Snipers, also known as the DC Snipers, also known as Dickhead A and Dickhead B, if you ask me.
Couple of shitbags.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed. So I think, you know, let's just dive straight into it. You know, let's not beat around the bush anymore.
Straight in, no kissing.
Straight in, no kissing. Come on now. Come on, y'all. Let's go to Washington, D.C. Oh, actually, no, shit. Washington State. We'll get to Washington, D.C. in a bit, folks, because that's where the shit went down. But to begin this whole story, it happens in the great state of Washington. At around 7 p.m. on February 6th, 2002, 20-year-old Kenya Nicole Cook had just been getting her six-month-old daughter, Angelia, ready for a bath when she heard a knock at the door. This was in Tacoma, Washington, and Kenya was staying with her aunt. But at this particular hour of the day, she was home alone. See, Kenya had been staying with her aunt and teenage cousin in Roosevelt Heights after a recent split from her child's father. They were due back to the house shortly, but for now, Kenya was home alone. And so she wrapped Angelia up securely on her bed and headed down to... who was that? Answered the door. Less than a minute later, the young mother would be lying dead in the hall. Kenya had been working hard as a manager of a clothing store and taking business courses in evenings to help build a better life for herself and her child. One squeeze of a trigger later, and all that hope was gone. She'd been shot in the face at a very close range with a .45 caliber pistol. She didn't have a chance. Right away, the question was, who the hell would want to hurt Kenya? A hardworking single mother. Yes, she'd just come out of a relationship, but it wasn't the kind of breakup in which either party would go and execute the other one in cold blood. The answer to this question would have to wait for 9 months, and by then, a lot more blood would be spilled. Though no one knew it at the time, Kenya's death was just the first in a series of shootings that terrified communities in many states around the US. But would specifically lead to the other Washington, D.C., and the surrounding areas for several weeks. Now, some of these crimes me and Keith are gonna, you know, skinny dip into, dive headfirst into, they wouldn't be definitively confirmed to have been a part of the spree until years, I'm talking years later. In fact, the shooting that led to Kenya's death wasn't confirmed as being linked to the others until 4 years after all this began in 2006. When Lee Boyd Malvo, one of the two men convicted of the Beltway Sniper attacks, finally confessed to being responsible. Malvo had been traveling around the Tacoma area with a man named John Allen Muhammad. After killing Kenya, the two traveled to LA before taking a bus to Tucson, Arizona in mid-March 2002 to visit Muhammad's sister, Odessa Newell.
Now, I know we're going to get into who these men are a little later.
Ooh, spoiler alert. A bit more detail.
But I think it's worth mentioning at this point that one of the snipers, John Muhammad, actually knew Kenya Cook's aunt, Isa Nichols. So Nichols was a friend of Muhammad's ex-wife and had sided with her through a very bitter divorce. The police, they now think that this may have been the motive for the murder, which kicked off a series of events. However, they're not sure whether the killer mistook Cook for Nichols or simply killed the niece to get back at the aunt.
I'd say he probably shot the first person to open the door, knowing he lived there. Maybe he assumed it would be Issa, but she wasn't home at the time.
So we're still not sure. Also, the gun that they used for the murder, the 45 caliber pistol, it wasn't even theirs. They'd borrowed it from a guy that they were staying with a few months prior, who would believe that he'd loaned the gun to them for a bit of target practice.
Well, it's definitely target practice, but not the kind of targets you were wanting to be.
Very, very true, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the man who they loaned the gun off, he was very cooperative and helped the police after this came out years later. But knowing your gun was used to kill someone, that's a bit shitty. Say that. Sticks with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. If they knew who they were shooting or whatnot, I don't think they gave a shit. Because judging by what we're going to get into and what they did over the following weeks, they just killed whoever the fuck they wanted to, and it was pretty completely random. The entire way through. The two had only been in Tucson for a matter of days when on the 19th of March, 2002, 60-year-old Jerry Ray Taylor was fatally shot in the back from long range as he practiced chip shots on the Fred Enke golf course. As we're going to get into, he is another victim where they just randomly went around popping off shots. You might say willy-nilly.
And you'd be right.
I would, thank you. Though police had long suspected the shooting was likely committed by Muhammad and Malvo, it was never conclusively confirmed until Malvo was interviewed by Maryland police whilst in prison, serving multiple life sentences for his part in the shootings to come. He only confessed on the condition of immunity from prosecution in the case. What's most depressing is that Jerry Taylor's wife died a year before the confession, so she died never having the closure of justice. Not that any further convictions were needed by that later point. With multiple life sentences himself and Muhammad awaiting execution, the truth had become the priority over justice or revenge.
According to friends and family of Jerry Ray Taylor, he was an easygoing, mild-mannered man who really just didn't have an enemy in the world. After he was killed, everyone, including the police, I said, they were just left completely puzzled. It seemed so random, which it completely was, as you said. There was absolutely zero connection between the snipers and Jerry Ray Taylor before this. There is some speculation, though, that this may have been a hit. This actually came from Malvo, who apparently confessed someone wanted the golfer killed and paid Muhammad $25,000 to do so. However, Malvo did not say who wanted Taylor dead, and local authorities have not confirmed if this allegation is true or not.
Keith coming in with the conspiracy angle.
Love the old theories, man.
Oh, you're throwing them in. Keith's a man for theories. He hasn't raised the pointer yet, folks, but I'm sure he will.
Oh, it's coming, it's coming.
In classic Keith style.
I'm warming up the finger, man.
Yeah.
Hey, wait up. Cut that out.
He's doing a certain motion, folks. You don't want to know. Muhammad and Malvo departed Tucson 9 days after killing Jerry Ray Taylor on March 28, 2002, taking a Greyhound bus and helping themselves to three of the bus driver's credit cards somewhere along the way. In early April, Muhammad and Malvo spent 5 days with an acquaintance of Muhammad's named Jason Hamilton in Bellingham, Washington. Exactly where they went and what they did immediately after that is kind of a shaky area. What we do know is that at some point they ended up back in Tacoma, Washington, as a Visa card that was among the three stolen cards was recorded being used at a Tacoma gas station around April 11, 2002. Things went quiet for a few months until early in September, though reports of gunshots fired at Temple Beth Synagogue in Tacoma in May have been attributed to Muhammad and Malvo, and would certainly fit in with the timeline and known movements of the two. See, they were just traveling around America, doing whatever the shit they wanted and just shooting anybody they saw fit to and got in their way.
Anyone or anything. The police were also able to confirm that the gun that fired the shots at the synagogue was a 44 caliber Magnum, which also belonged to the same guy who loaned Muhammad and Malvo the gun used to kill Kenya Nicole Cook earlier. So I'm not sure what the point of them firing at the synagogue was. No one was inside at the time of the shooting, so they were literally off firing at anything and anyone. He was just shot at an empty building.
Muhammad and Malvo spent the majority of July and August in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, so Muhammad could visit family. They stayed with Muhammad's cousin, Charlene Anderson. She would later say that Muhammad had told her that he and Malva were parts of a, get this, clandestine military unit on a spec ops mission, one of them.
Mm.
Pretty cool. He also took the time to get nostalgic and called his former classmate, Janet M. Scott, and asked her if she'd go to his 25th high school reunion with him, catching up with the old gang. The answer probably wasn't positive, though, and in early August, the pair were spotted twice at the health food market, Our Daily Bread in Baton Rouge. Perhaps feeling the heat, the two returned to Tacoma in late August, where they visited Todd Paulson's auto repair shop and considered buying a Lincoln Continental, though they later decided against it.
Baton Rouge comes up a lot, doesn't it?
Baton Rouge comes up a lot, yeah. Tacoma comes up a lot, and as we will get to, DC comes up a lot. Yeah. These were just two men randomly traveling around America. I mean, hey, listen, they love to travel. They love to kill and they love to travel. What more do you want?
But not even this story, I just mean in general, Baton Rouge.
And just the murders and stuff, yeah.
I did something in the water up there.
Well, yeah, I did, on the Chan. That's a fancy word for Chan. I covered the story of Sean Vincent Gillis, the serial killer, who was active in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And when he was active, there was like two other serial killers active in the same area at the same time. It was like 50 people or something were killed, like murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
In just this, over this period by serial killers. Yeah, yeah, it does come up a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's a wild area.
Yeah, damn Cajuns.
Yeah. Also, that high school you're in reunion sounds awful. Like 25 years later? If I haven't talked to you in 25 years.
Mm-hmm. There's a good reason.
Why do I want to talk to you now?
Yeah. Have you ever been to a reunion, a school reunion?
No. Have you?
No.
No,
I mean, it would have been my 10-year school reunion. Well, 2019.
Yeah.
If they did or they didn't invite me.
where are those people, I'd say, like, when you leave school, you don't talk anymore? Where are those people that don't talk
exactly, to? Yeah, exactly. We don't get invited to reunions. I wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, no.
I keep in contact with the friends from school who I want to keep in contact with, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't need any more friends.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they always just sound awful going back to those reunions anyway. It seems like most people just go back to probably just brag and shit. Anyway.
Yeah,
it's like, look how good I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely seems like that.
So, the period of relative peace came to a sudden, horrifying conclusion on September 5th, 2002, when 55-year-old Paul LaRuffa was shot 5 times in the back with a .22 caliber handgun by Lee Boyd Malvo as he closed up Margelina's Pizzeria, which he owned. This latest cold-blooded act happened in Clinton, Washington, a small coastal town across the bay from Seattle, expanding the killer duo's range even further. They also expanded their repertoire of crimes. In addition to doing their very best to kill Paul LaRuffa, Muhammad and Malvo helped themselves to his Sony Vaio laptop and more than $3,500 in cash from the pizzeria. Somewhat miraculously, despite taking bullets to the neck, diaphragm, and losing a massive amount of blood and marinara sauce and having collapsed lungs, I can make jokes because he didn't die. Okay, I feel fine with doing it. Keith's giving me judgmental sniffs. I can feel it.
That was pretty good. It was funny.
Paul LaRuffa underwent 9 hours of surgery and months of recovery, but in the end survived the vicious attack. LaRuffa is now enjoying retirement and actually owns a horse named Sniper. See, he's making jokes. His horse is called Sniper Survivor. We can't laugh. Malvo later told authorities that he and Muhammad had trailed Paul LaRuffa for 3 days before the attack.
It is an awesome name for a horse, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suppose it's a good way to own your own trauma as well.
Yeah, you know? Exactly, yeah.
Once again, like, even though they'd followed him for 3 days, it was still a completely random attack. And Paul LaRuffa, he said in interviews for 2 months, he was mentally really paranoid and scared because he just didn't know who shot him, which is, you know,
of course.
Fair enough. You would be terrified. You don't know if they're going to come back and try to finish the job or not.
Yeah.
But it does seem like that they got exactly what they were after. In the end, as I said, they got the $3,500 they stole. And they used that to help finance their insane rampage that would later to come. And even though Paul LaRuffa, he was completely innocent in all this, he did say in an interview, "I definitely felt odd about the fact that my money probably financed the whole escapade. It probably bought them gas. It probably bought them ammunition. It probably bought them food and a car. I'm sure they lived on that money the whole time." So I'm sure there's a lot of survivor's guilt going on there.
That's fucking crazy, though. Like, there's no way he should be feeling any guilt at all.
No.
Like, the guy who lent him the guns, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, no, he didn't know what they were going to do with them. But, I mean, they shot you, they almost killed you and stole your money.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, hey, they also stole his Sony... I'm bringing out the point now. They also stole his Sony Vaio laptop.
That's it.
I used to have one of them. Oh. They were good-ass laptops. They stopped making them, but that was my first laptop, and it was a really good laptop.
Nice. I don't know. Mine was a Toshiba.
Ah, man. Well,
it was not good.
No. I remember I had it when I was like 16, 17, and LimeWire, baby.
Oh, man. It was like I heard someone say before, it's like having unprotected sex with the internet.
Yeah.
The best way I can, like, I've heard the definition of it.
Got every STD, internet STD possible. I just torrent and LimeWire the shit out of everything. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it just, like, went on fire one day. That's why I had to get rid of it.
I destroyed our family computer with it.
Yeah.
We'd only had it, like, about 2 weeks. Yeah, and I was like, what happened? I was like, I don't know.
LimeWire is big tits, big tits. Like, every time I press B.
Like, all that for like two songs downloaded.
340p. Yeah. Just boobs. Good times. Internet, man. Internet, back in the days, internet. Keith, hey, let's have a podcast about early internet days.
It's mic time.
I remember I had my very first, okay, we're in the mic zone. I remember I used to have an MP3 player, you know, it was like a Creative Zen.
I had a Creative Zen, but they were awesome. They were really good.
Oh, man, I miss those things. This is a real blocky piece of chip.
Oh, awesome. They were bulky.
I had like 100 songs and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I remember I got like I ended up getting like 500 songs off my cousin. But it was, none of them were named.
This is track one, track two.
Yeah, track one, like all the way to track 500, like, so I never knew what I was listening to. But it was great. Yeah,
yeah, I love track 26. Yeah. It's so funny, like, I appreciated music back then, and now, you know, Spotify, like, every song I exist, and I'm like, listen to the same 5 songs over and over again.
No, that's the thing. All I listen to now is literally songs from my youth.
Yeah.
Rarely listen to new songs.
Yeah. I do not. I'm not keeping up with the kids. I've just tuned out. Yeah. It's like, I've decided, no, this is music I like. Like, I don't care about anything else.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm good. Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah, no, yeah, exact same.
All right, back to the story of the DC Snyder. Man, we do love our tangents, don't we?
I do.
Yeah. I wonder if people just start listening and just like press 30-second skip. And we go off topic.
Oh my God, I'm still talking about it. Move on.
Sorry. All right. So shortly after...
No, actually, I have another thing to say.
The pointer is out.
You can't put the pointer back
on. Shortly after the attack on Paul LaRuffa, Malvo and Muhammad made their way to Camden, New Jersey. And while hanging out at the All Nations Cuisine restaurant, they met 26-year-old Nathaniel O. Osborne, a Jamaican immigrant who came to the U.S. in 1996. On the 11th of September, Osborne helped Malvo and Muhammad to register a 1990 blue Chevy Capri that Muhammad had bought the day before from Sure Shot Auto Sales in Trenton, New Jersey, for $250.
What a bargain.
That is wild.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is in 2002, and that's... crazy. Is that actually correct? That seems like oddly low. I'm just going to double check that. Like, that actually seems like...
Well, I bought my first car for like $400, and that was...
They did actually purchase the car for $200. Sorry, folks. I actually just had to Google that because that seems wildly low. I just wanted to double check that.
It's like, the cost of secondhand cars now.
Yeah. Oh, man. Folks are having an attention.
The cost of cars these days is
wild. It's off the chains. Hey, listen, back to 2002, you can get a 12-year-old car for $250. That seems like, I know we talk about inflation and shit, but even for, you know, 22 years ago now, Jesus. That seems wildly low.
Yeah. Takes back the good old days.
Yeah, I know, the good old days. On the registration paperwork, Muhammad and Osborne both gave their addresses as 1400 Sheraton Street in Camden, which was actually the address of the All Nations Cuisine restaurant where they had met. While Osborne would later be arrested in relation to domestic violence charges and then later again on a federal witness warrant in connection with Malvo and Muhammad's crimes, he was never considered to know what the two were up to and played no part in the shootings that were already happening and to come. Muhammad and Malvo definitely were very good at using all those around them to get what they wanted, from guns to cars to addresses to money. 3 days later, on the 14th of September 2002, 22-year-old Rupinder Benny Oberoi was helping his boss, Arnie Zelkovitz, the owner of the Hillendale Beer and Wine Store, Rupinder worked as a cashier, close up for the night, when out of nowhere they heard a loud crack. A few seconds later, Rupinder was on the floor, struggling to breathe. Fortunately, an off-duty police officer happened to be nearby and called 911 while rendering first aid to Rupinder. The Hillendale store was very close to the Beltway, a loop of highways that run around Washington, D.C., and where police believe these snipers took their shot from. It also gave the shooters the name that stuck in the media, the Beltway Snipers. Rupinder suffered severe damage to both kidneys and his liver, and even lost a large chunk of his stomach, but he recovered.
After this, Rupinder's father said that family was extremely disappointed because they felt the police had not aggressively investigated the shooting when it happened.
Yeah.
Which I'm sort of inclined to believe. Like, with everything they did so far, it's crazy the police were, like, not hot on their tail.
Oh, yeah. And, spoiler alert, but this will keep going. Like, they just randomly drove around murdering people.
Yeah,
and no spoilers, but there's a part in the story where they essentially fuck up.
And that's
how they get caught.
That's it, yeah. It's not true, like...
It's wild.
The story gets crazy, but...
I mean, I'm sure they would have got caught eventually, but yeah, like, as you're saying, it wasn't amazing, stunning detective work that solved the story of these two people. I mean, their body count is insane.
And like I said, like, this, they've, like, from the first killing, they've done this for, like, 9 months.
Yeah.
Had no idea. They did nothing at all. It's crazy.
Yeah. So the very next day after shooting Rupinder, September 15, 2002, 32-year-old Mohammed Rashid was also preparing to lock up the liquor store where he worked when he was shot at three times. The first two shots missed, but the third hit him in the stomach and dropped him to the ground. Even though he was in immense pain and had to desperately struggle to stifle a cough, he thought quickly, and he played dead. While he laid as still as possible, he felt a man, who he'd later realize was Malvo, rifle through his pockets and take his wallet. Rashid was able to cling to life and even gave the police a detailed description of Malvo, and even mentioned seeing a dark-colored sedan parked nearby.
Rashid, he was the only eyewitness who provided authorities with a detailed description of the suspects throughout all this.
Yeah, I mean, again, spoiler, but their method of how they were committing all of these random sniper attacks, shooting attacks, was pretty ingenious, because they were doing it all from the car, or most of them, I believe, from the car.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later in a bit. 6 days later, across state lines in Atlanta, Georgia, and just like Rupinder Oberoi and Mohammed Rashid, 41-year-old Million A. Woldermariam was helping a friend close up Sammy's package store on September 21st, 2002, when he was shot in the back and head three times at close range by Malvo and Mohammed. This time, the wounds would prove to be fatal. Million was an Ethiopian immigrant, and like those before him, he'd been chosen at random. Ballistics would later match C-22 used, being the same as being used in earlier attacks. Later, the same day, Mohammed and Malvo struck again when they shot two women as they closed up a liquor store for the night. Store manager, 52-year-old Claudine Parker, died, but the 24-year-old cashier, Kelly Adams, survived, despite being shot from point-blank range, shooting with the same 22. This time around, robbery was thought to be the motive, but was thwarted by two police officers who happened to be patrolling nearby. Unfortunately, though, for everybody in this story, Mohammed and Malvo were able to get away.
Kelly Adams was extremely lucky to have survived this. The bullet had entered the back of her head and exited through her chin.
Oh my God, going through all the good stuff.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. She said that part of her face had been blown onto her chest. Ugh. And through instinct, she'd reached down and just placed this mass of flesh back where it belonged.
Oh my God.
And for 5 years, Adams, she endured 30 surgeries. And for a while had to rely on a feeding tube. So incredibly lucky to survive this.
Yeah. Jeez, wow. 2 days passed before the deadly duo struck again. There was another slight changeup in their MO, perhaps spurred on by their near miss in Atlanta, almost getting caught by the cops. The victim this time was 45-year-old Korean immigrant Hong Im Ballinger. Ballinger was shot in the head in the parking lot of her workplace, Beauty Depot in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
We're back.
We never left. The shooting also took place much earlier than the previous attacks. This time it was at 6:35 p.m. Usually we're getting people when they're closing up. Now, if you thought, you know, that things were completely out of hand by this point, hold on to your butts. Because things went from bad to really, really, really bad. But before we get to that, I should probably tell you about who these guys were that managed to terrify multiple states and had everyone from small town sheriff's deputies all the way to the ATF chasing after them. Who are these two boyos? Lee Boyd Malvo was born on February 18th, 1985 to a teenage mother, Una James, and a 35-year-old Mason in Kingston, Jamaica. Una would quickly become a single mother to a young child, and Malvo, he grew up in relative poverty, surrounded by the brutal gangs constantly fighting with one another and the police over territorial disputes. Malvo moved to the States with his mother 3 years, only 3 years before the shootings, when he was just 13 years old. The mother and son, duo, they entered the US illegally, risking their lives by being smuggled in a cargo container, which, you know, they were obviously extremely desperate to escape the ever-present threat of violence and death. They originally landed in Fort Myers, Florida, but were eventually able to settle in the state of Washington.
Not even two illegal immigrants wanted to stay in Florida. Just coming out of the container, like, whoa, the humidity! Fuck this! <Yeah. laughs>
Very nice, my friend.
Thanks.
John Allen Muhammad, who was going by Sergeant John A. Williams at the time, had served in the regular army and the National Guard, though he was twice court-martialed in the 1980s, once for disobeying orders and again for punching another sergeant. That second offense got him demoted. After the shootings, Muhammad's commanding officer told reporters, Muhammad was, quote, a very nice guy, liked by all the men. He was tall, athletic, with a million-dollar smile. He was a natural-born leader, but he was prone to flashes of anger. All in all, he was in the military for 16 years. It was also in his time in the army that Muhammad had honed his marksman skills, earning awards for his long-range shooting, though he was not a sniper. That is a specific designation and requires attending certain schools to qualify for it. Muhammad, though, he did achieve the much coveted marksman badge with expert rating. That was using an M16 rifle. Not that I know anything about guns, but I presume that's pretty cool. Now, something that he was not as expert as a qualified sniper, that still requires he could shoot real good, essentially, is the point.
To qualify as an expert, Muhammad, he would have had to hit at least 36 out of 40 targets at a distance ranging from 50 to 300 meters.
Wow, that's so,
pretty
far.
Good marksman.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. He served in an engineering unit during the 1991 Gulf War, receiving 3 medals during that time. And it was in the 1990s that, after converting to Islam and changing his name from Williams to Muhammad, he sprang to the attention of authorities for violating a court order by contacting his ex-wife and kidnapping his 3 children. Muhammad lost his mother to cancer when he was just 3 years old. One theme that comes up quite often in his life is just how well-liked he was. His old friends praised his neighborhood protector status. Even in his school days, he seemed to have everything going for him. You know, he was a keen and popular athlete growing up in school. He was well-liked, respected, and that continued throughout his soldiering years. Muhammad's first marriage ended early in the 1980s, and he got married a second time to Mildred Denise Williams in 1988, a year after he converted to the Nation of Islam. During their marriage, the couple appeared like, you know, a model American family. All in all, just real good people. But once the marriage broken down, the truth came out, and affidavits filed during the divorce painted Muhammad as a seriously violent and troubled man.
After years of abuse, when Mildred finally broke free from her husband, he uttered the following chilling promise to her. He said, "You've become my enemy, and as my enemy, I will kill you."
Wow.
There is no reading between the lines on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
yeah.
Clear what he was trying
well,
to do.
Well, I mean, you know, that could really mean anything. Malvo and his mother, Una James, met Muhammad in Antigua and Barbuda sometime in 1999. And Una and Muhammad, they became close friends, something and you know, she no doubt regrets every day of her life. It's also worth noting that the reason he was in Antigua was because he had, well, that was the aforementioned kidnapping. He stole his children and fled. Muhammad and Malvo were very close from the start. And the two, they even introduced one another as father and son, though occasionally as slightly more accurately, stepfather and stepson. When the shootings began, John Muhammad was 41 years old, Lee Malvo 17 years old. They truly were like father and son. Murderer. The bond only grew when they did a tour of homeless shelters together, bouncing from place to place before the spree started.
Yeah, Malvo had some serious issues with, like, feeling abandoned. Mm. He was on the lookout for a father figure, and unfortunately, he ended up connecting with Muhammad, who was looking for someone to just control, brainwash, and exert power over.
Yeah.
This indoctrination, it involved teaching Malvo how to use guns, watching violent movies, playing sniper video games, and I said, touring poor neighborhoods in the US cities to make him turn against the government. But what made Muhammad's influence even stronger was that Malvo was totally cut off from his family and friends.
Mm.
Muhammad, he had such a tight grip over everything in Malvo's life, from exercise, his diet, even to what he was thinking, to the point where he believed Muhammad was training him for a mission, the mission you mentioned earlier.
The secrets, clandestine spec ops.
That one, yeah, yeah. So he also took part in special training exercises. One included standing outside in the snow, chained to a tree for hours to learn how to withstand interrogations if he was ever caught. You know, how those interrogations go.
Yeah, exactly. They keep getting the call and seeing you a tree.
Fine, I did it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to make any excuses for what Malvo did. I don't think this made him any less responsible for his crime. Just trying to highlight what the nature of their relationship was. And it's pretty toxic.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, you can't excuse what he did, but he was brainwashed, essentially.
He was groomed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And all this carnage they did across America, these sprees of traveling around, it wouldn't be linked to them for quite a bit. But little did anyone know, they were just getting started. And let's pick up next week with the rest of the story.
It's honestly just getting going.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we're just getting started, folks. The DC sniper attacks haven't even kind of started happening yet. We're going to get to that in the next episode. For now, you know, they're just chilling around, traveling America, and shooting people.
Shooting up the joint, yeah.
Yeah, pretty disgustingly and disturbingly.
It's messed up.
Yeah, it is. But there you have it. Thank you so much for listening to this whole episode of the That Chapter podcast. I hope you enjoyed spending time with me and Keith. And as I said, we will pick up a part two of the Beltway Snipers, the DC Snipers, the Two Dickheads next week.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it.
Good. I'm always waiting for Keith's final thought for the day.
My final thought?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just don't befriend grown men.
Well, wow. Right. Folks, write that down. All right. Thank you so much for listening. It means a lot to me and Keith. And we're listening. Talk to you next week.
I'll see you.
All right. Thanks. As he closed up Margelina's pizzeria, which he owned shortly before midnight. Oh, he owned a pizzeria. Just saying.
That was good.
Yeah, thank you.